Welcome to Tooled Up Education's Researcher of the Month, where the Tooled Up team selects a paper from a notable researcher that will be of interest to parents and school staff everywhere.
Anya Hennigan is a PhD researcher at the Institute of Psychiatry, Psychology and Neuroscience at King's College London, with a BSc in Forensic Psychology from Kingston University. Her PhD thesis is dedicated to siblings' experiences of having a brother or sister with an eating disorder, which is largely inspired by her own experience as a sibling in this context. Through her work, she hopes to raise awareness of these underserved and often forgotten individuals with the goal of improving support services for siblings. Welcome, Anya.
Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you, because you're going to be our researcher of the month within Tooled Up. And we know that you've been part of a wonderful new paper, which we're celebrating today. And I think that paper is called The Experiences of Having a Sibling with an Eating Disorder, a Systematic Review of the Literature.
Yes, that's correct.
So, Anya, tell us a little bit about, I think I've just had a hint of it in your biography, but what sort of drew you to this topic? And tell us a little bit about sort of that particular paper and how it came about.
So, as you mentioned, my interest in this area is largely inspired by my own experiences. But I met my first supervisor, Dr. Maria Livenoux, when I was at Kingston University doing my undergrad, and she also had a research interest in eating disorders. So when I first considered doing a PhD, I met with her to discuss some options for where the research could be headed. And together we spoke about a few areas that needed more research, and one of which was siblings. And I really didn't expect anything like that. That wasn't sort of my intention going into it, that that's where my PhD would be focused. But it made sense at the time when we identified that more work was needed.
And I'm certainly aware in my work that this is a totally understudied area. And so we were delighted to come across your work. And reading your paper, I was struck by just how challenging it is for siblings of young people with an eating disorder and what a sort of sense of loss they might feel about many aspects of their childhood. I think there was a quote from your paper which reads, "The review found that the eating disorder impacts many areas of siblings' lives, how they view themselves and the world around them, causing immense disruption, intruding on daily life, schoolwork. Significantly higher levels of depression were found in siblings with a sibling with an eating disorder compared to a control group, and the quality of life negatively impacted. Siblings reported that the effect of the eating disorder on their lives is inescapable, occurring at times of identity formation, transition, and important life events." And they reported that their daily life was often taken over by that eating disorder. So it sounded so all engulfing, didn't it?
Yeah, it really is. Sort of, there's no area of life that isn't affected when something like that is happening within your family, which is why it's so important that we do raise awareness of this. A lot came up in the literature about it doesn't just affect my sibling, it affects me as well, or it affects my whole family. People even reported effects sort of outside of the immediate family, which we don't think of. We think if a person has an eating disorder, then it's them that's affected by that illness. But actually, it's such a large effect that just takes over.
That's right. And it's, you know, it's sad to think that the eating disorder seems to be, you know, like a blanket covering so many aspects, but so useful to raise awareness that it has ripple effects that are significant. And there has to be some development of support package for that sibling who must be presumably a very significant support person, you know, source of support for the child or young person going through the eating disorder.
Absolutely. Siblings offer sort of a vital form of support. They've got a really unique position within the family. Sort of being a sibling, they're more of a similar age to the sibling with the eating disorder. And they're sort of seen as more of an ally than their parents. So their parents are sort of seen above them in the hierarchy and telling them what to do, telling them what to eat, monitoring them. Whereas siblings are often seen as more of a confidant and on the same level. Although, again, this does get disrupted by the eating disorder, and often where siblings were once equal, the sibling that has the eating disorder is often described as falling down within the hierarchy. So they need to be cared for by their sibling, and siblings often take on caregiving roles. But interestingly, they don't see themselves as carers. sometimes they see that their role is different, but they don't consider it to be that of carer. Yet when they go on to describe their responsibilities and the roles they take on, it is what we would say is a caring role.
And obviously it's so difficult for any young person to navigate the complexity of discussion with a sibling who has an eating disorder, because it's not easy even for adults to have those conversations. And you can imagine that sort of sense of frustration or even anger or grief or bereavement that your sibling, you know, is going through that. And it must be incredibly difficult to come to terms with what's happening and understand it.
Yeah, definitely. Conversations with the sibling with the eating disorder are often seen as a balancing act, because it's very hard to know what to talk about and when you can talk about things. So what is okay to discuss one day might then not be okay to discuss the next day. And it's very hard to know what you can talk about and when. They feel like, you know, they can't be open and honest in their communication because they might upset people by talking about things. And they don't really have enough understanding, because sometimes the parents just don't want to talk about it, or they might feel like they're protecting the sibling by not giving them too much information. But actually, that is what siblings need. They need the information to be able to understand what is happening and make sense of it for themselves.
And that kind of clarity. And presumably, you know, there should be a therapeutic alliance established between the therapist who's supporting the young person with the eating disorder and the whole family system in an ideal world.
Yeah, absolutely. Unfortunately, that doesn't seem to be the case. Siblings aren't always invited to the therapy sessions. And when they are, they report that the professionals just don't know what to do with them while they're there, and they don't know how to include them properly.
And you can understand parents want to shield the sibling and think, oh gosh, you know, I don't want them to be as impacted as they might be by this whole experience. And they just want it potentially, you know, solved within that one case. But you can understand the sort of the fear of opening it up to the sibling, if you like.
Yeah, which is completely understandable. But at the same time, when something like that is happening within your family unit and within your home, you're aware of these changes and these impacts, whether you know exactly or implicitly that it is an eating disorder. You're aware of the changes in communication, the changes in the home environment and the atmosphere. There's a lot more tension and arguing, negative emotions. And with certain eating disorders, for example, like a restrictive eating disorder, you can see the effect of the eating disorder on the sibling that is unwell. So even though they're not explicitly told and it's not discussed with them, they can still tell that something is happening.
Of course, absolutely. Now, in your paper, you were obviously, it was a systematic review. So that means, for people who don't understand what that means, it's quite a holistic look at everything out there. Would that be an accurate description?
Yes, it's sort of searching to find all the literature that could possibly be related to your topic, and then narrowing it down to find those that are actually suitable and fit your criteria.
So I'm quite curious, did you find literature much more dominant in places like America and Australia? How are we doing, you know, in the UK in terms of an interest, an academic interest to this topic?
I think we're doing quite well, actually, because a lot of the papers that we identified weren't published papers, they were theses. So quite a few of those came from the UK. There was maybe one or two from America, one from Germany, sort of all over, but there was about three or four that came from within the UK.
Brilliant. And I understand that you found five core themes that emerged from the review of sibling experiences. Let's talk us through those, please.
Of course. So we have since done an updated search within the last about a week. So because the original search took place 2 years ago, we felt as a research team that we should probably have a look and see if anything had been published since then. So we have actually generated a sixth theme, which I will discuss as well with you.
Lovely.
Just to let you know. So the first theme was the socio-cognitive emotional effects of having a sibling with an eating disorder. So this found that the eating disorder affects many areas of siblings' lives. As we said earlier, the siblings had higher levels of depression compared to a control group of siblings who did not have a brother or sister with an eating disorder, and their quality of life was also negatively affected, and the eating disorder was described as being inescapable. And as we mentioned, it comes at a time of identity formation, transition, important life events, which they feel are now less important and are overshadowed both by the eating disorder, but also by their sibling with the eating disorder, because all the time and attention goes towards them. And there's changes in the emotional communication within the family. And the eating disorder is likened to destruction and a war zone. And they feel they have to be cautious in their communication with all members of the family because they don't want to upset anyone and add to people's burdens. And it was also reported that their attitudes towards food and body image had changed. So some siblings say that they felt that they couldn't see themselves in a positive way when they compared themselves to their sibling with the eating disorder. And that made them sort of be more cautious about what they were eating and when they were eating. And they felt guilty eating certain foods, whereas others said actually it had more of a positive impact on their attitude towards food and body image because they could see the importance of having a good relationship with food and of taking care of yourself and using food for energy. But then they did sort of describe foods as good or bad and things you had to treat yourself with. So they were describing a good relationship with food, but they were sort of contradicting that in the way they spoke about it. And saying that they make themselves eat even when they're not hungry because, you know, it's good to keep eating and have this energy. But again, that could also be a disordered relationship with food. So they have to be careful with how they view that. There was also difficulty expressing emotions. So they struggle to voice their experiences and communicate their feelings. They fear that judgment and they experience shame and embarrassment at the idea of sharing their experience with other people. There's a lot of secrecy around the eating disorder, so they're cautious who they discuss it with. Some explain that this is because their sibling with the eating disorder doesn't want other people to know, so they're respecting their sibling's wishes, whereas others say that they feel that it could be used against them, and in some cases it has, and it's led to bullying, so they try not to talk about it where they can help it. But also they felt that they had not had the space or the opportunity before to speak openly and reflect on their experience and ask questions. But they did feel that the interviews and the researchers from the papers included in the review facilitated this process and allowed them the chance to speak freely without worrying about upsetting somebody.
So that's quite interesting. They welcomed being part of the scrutiny that comes with being part of a research project.
Yeah, and they appreciated the fact that they'd been given a chance to speak up about their experience.
Yeah, which sort of indicates that that's a much needed space. And potentially as well, was there a feeling that being part of a study like that, they understood that they weren't alone, that there were other siblings in the world going through similar experiences?
Definitely, yeah. And it links to one of the other things that we found as well in the review is that they want to be able to speak to other siblings because it's such a unique experience and it's not something you can understand unless you've lived through it yourself. So having someone that is of a similar age and has gone through a similar situation, they will be more understanding and it helps the situation seem more normal and they can give you advice and they can give you tips. And it's sort of easier than speaking to somebody that's not your developmental age and hasn't been through it because they just wouldn't fully understand.
Perfect. So have we covered the sixth core theme yet?
We haven't, no. So the sixth theme was the reflection on the positive byproducts of the eating disorder. So the experience as a whole was not positive, but when siblings were reflecting on their experience, they did say that there were some positive outcomes. For example, personal development and growth. So they felt they were more mature, they could take on more responsibilities, that they had sort of grown as a person, and there was closer relationships reported within the family and a greater understanding of mental illness. So they could see that they had to look after themselves and that everyone else had to look after themselves. And if they noticed, for example, within the family unit that someone was possibly slipping or something negative was going on, they could see that it had to sort of be tackled as early as possible so that it didn't then spiral into something worse. But there was regret also about the way that these things had to come about. So they saw these outcomes as positive, but they regretted that it had to come from the eating disorder. And they did also question whether they would have become this person anyway. So was the personal growth and development due to the eating disorder, or was it because of natural development, and would they have still been this way had they not been through that experience?
And it sounds very parallel to caring experiences, you know, that you're sort of, you learn the hard way and the resilience is developed through, you know, difficulty and mature, you know, children have to mature at a much higher rate because they're dealing with, you know, quite challenging experiences.
Yeah, definitely. They did feel that they had to take on more responsibilities and more roles than what is normally expected at their age.
And we've been talking about sort of different, you know, siblings as a sort of a homogenous group. But what age ranges are we talking about here? Because presumably it's very different if you're 9 years old and you've got a 14-year-old sister or brother going through this as opposed to being close in age.
Yeah. So in the review, the papers were, I believe the youngest age was 11 off the top of my head. And it went all the way up to 52.
Wow.
Siblings. Yeah. So some papers had both adolescents and adults, where some just had one group of siblings. They did mention some of them, like the birth order or how many years were between the siblings. But when it came to the analysis, there was no sort of looking at how that affected the experiences.
And what was your sort of general feeling about that? What was your sort of observation about sibling age or even birth order? What did you come away from the review thinking yourself about that?
So it did seem that older siblings feel more guilty. So they feel that they are possibly to blame, or if they're not able to help out as much as they would like, they feel a greater sense of guilt than younger siblings. There's also an increased understanding in older siblings, and possibly, you know, finding it easier to be able to separate the illness from their sibling with the eating disorder rather than seeing it as the sibling was acting in this way.
Yeah, so that sort of level of maturity was quite helpful.
Yeah, sort of in the understanding and the way they approached the illness. But they also felt they had to be the protector and be a role model. I think just because they were older, they felt that that was their role anyway, and that was then heightened when their sibling had an eating disorder. But opposite to that, the younger siblings often were more likely to report eating difficulties because they view their older sibling as a role model, so feel that they should be following their behaviours.
So there's a very fine balance between being the role model and not inadvertently adding pressure to, you know, the idea of being perfect or you know, been held up to some sort of standard.
Yeah. Definitely. And the different ages as well, it seemed that they had different ideas of how they would continue in their caregiving role going forwards, or if their parents were no longer able to help with caregiving.
And for some of these families, it's a lifelong commitment and caring responsibility. For others, it will just be a sort of an episodic experience within family life at a particular stage, isn't it? It's very different for different people.
Yeah, and that was touched on briefly in some of the papers. Again, there was no analysis on it, but it was sort of mentioned throughout the results. And it seemed that those that had, where it was longer lasting, there was more reported exhaustion and sort of wanting to give up, removing yourself slightly more because, you know, it had gone on for so long and you're trying to build your own family. Some of them might have gone on to have their own children. And that just caused a strain then with their sibling with the eating disorder because they're trying to protect their own family.
Absolutely. And I'm curious about any gender differences, anything that you observed or noticed from the review in terms of, you know, differential experience in that regard.
Yeah, of course. Again, there was no particular analysis in terms of gender differences, but there was some things that did arise during the review. So some studies did mention that sisters wanted to be more involved than brothers and wanted to take on more of the caregiving roles. But this was noted that it was perhaps due to societal expectations of caregiving and gender roles. So females sort of expected to be more of the maternal caregivers, whereas males sort of did the more practical roles. And in some studies, the brothers reported that the eating disorder had not impacted their food and body image behaviours, whereas sisters reported that this was the case for them. But there's definitely more research needed to investigate the differences in experience due to gender and age.
And Anya, we know that NICE guidelines from 2020 clarify that family members who take on the role of caregiving, including siblings of young people with an eating disorder, need support, they need education. what support is generally available? You've mentioned that it's not particularly holistic or that, you know, well established, but is there a general standard and does it vary by area? What are your sort of observations about that? Because it sounds like it's absolutely needed.
It's certainly needed. And it does seem to vary by area, by funding, which is really unfortunate. It just seems that some siblings are invited to therapy, but as I mentioned before, they don't find it useful because they don't feel like they're properly involved and they don't feel like they can speak freely and openly because they might upset their family by sharing their true feelings. There definitely does need to be a general standard for siblings. They've been told that there's a lack of time and funding to provide this support. In one of the studies, siblings had actually asked for it when their sibling with the eating disorder was in treatment, and they were told there was no time and funding, so it wasn't going to happen.
And yet in places I know in America, there are online support groups, there are online opportunities to develop. I think it's been sort of self-generated by siblings themselves, but there are sort of current practices where people have taken on the initiative themselves, even just to provide that basic level of support and sort of, you know, collegiality amongst the siblings.
Yeah, which is something that would be great for that to be widespread. I know Feast Eating Disorders in Australia, they have recently started something similar. So it's support groups, it's run by siblings. Beat Eating Disorders were starting a sibling support group. I don't know many details about that. So I don't know if it's that one's run by siblings or if it just for siblings to join, but it definitely needs to be something that is rolled out.
Absolutely. And from everything that you know, we're very interested, obviously, in Tooled Up and sort of supporting parents, working out what's optimal, what does the research tell us or guide us in terms of how to best support young people. Just imagine that parent has concerns, they're at the point of the child's diagnosis. Should they bring the sibling along with them? You know, what is the level of transparency that you believe is optimal between parent and sibling about the suspected eating disorder at that point?
I think they should absolutely take the sibling along. They should just be honest and tell the sibling what's happening. Remind them that their brother or sister is receiving support from a team of professionals and it's not their responsibility to help them get better, and that the whole family is experiencing these changes and you're going to go through it together. I think give them facts that are developmentally appropriate or appropriate for your child that you feel is their level of understanding. But absolutely being honest is key. Remind them that their role is that of a sibling and not as a parent. So they should continue to spend time doing fun activities and things they enjoy with the sibling with the eating disorder. And I know it's really difficult for parents because they're trying to juggle everything, but try and make sure that you can still spend one-to-one time with that sibling so they don't then feel like they're less important, and encourage them to talk about their feelings and seek help and support when it's needed. Either tell them, obviously, that they can come to you and ask any questions, but if they'd rather not because they don't want to upset you or burden you, maybe identify another key person they feel comfortable going to and speaking to, but include them and let them know what's going on because they're going to pick up that something is happening.
Yeah, those are some gorgeous tips. Thank you so much. And I think I was really touched by something mentioned, I think, in your paper, that being asked to spy or gather intelligence, you know, you could just imagine, I think as parents, we've probably all done it, you know, suggested that younger brother spies on older brother or see what you can find out. That was particularly distressing for siblings in this sort of experience. Tell us a little bit more about that and why you would sort of caution parents in this situation, although it's very understandable, but caution them against doing it.
Yes, so siblings were concerned that it would upset their sibling with the eating disorder if they knew that they were watching over them and gathering information to then report it back to parents. They felt like this could make their sibling a bit more secretive and hiding things. But it was also quite stressful for them to feel like they had to be constantly watching and reporting information back. On the other hand, some did think that their sibling with the eating disorder might have been allowing them to see certain things on purpose, knowing that it would then get fed back to their parents, because it was easier for them than approaching their parents directly to ask for help. Again, we do have to be careful with this, not to place undue responsibility on this to siblings. So it's not their place to step up and become an extra adult or an extra parent. And we need to be cautious about expecting them to watch over the meal times and how much and when their sibling with the eating disorder is eating, And this can impact their own relationship with food, which obviously is something we do need to be cautious about. Don't force siblings to be involved. If they don't want to, that's up to them, but ask them if they'd like to be involved in treatment sessions and set boundaries with each other. So how much are the parents happy for the siblings to be involved and how much is the sibling happy to be involved? And try and balance both of those. And don't make siblings eat more to encourage their sibling with the eating disorder to eat more. That was also one of the key things that was found. Again, that can lead to disordered eating patterns and behaviours.
One of the things that I'm struck by is the importance of clarity around role. What can you do to help as a sibling? And just being really clear about it. And I think this conversation will help guide parents as to what is optimal and helping relieve the pressure on the sibling that they're not expected to be the clinician. They're not expected to be the parent. They're not expected to be the spy. They're expected to continue to enjoy that relationship with their sibling in ways that have always been historically, you know, working well.
Yeah, and siblings reported that, you know, they needed that reassurance from professionals and clinicians that it wasn't their job to make sure that their sibling with the eating disorder was healthy and recovering, but they also needed clarity on what their roles are and what they should be doing.
What about school? Because clearly, you know, school's part of that sort of therapy, because a lot of children spend a lot of time in school. And, you know, teachers and pastoral staff will probably be involved in that child's therapy or care plan. You know, what about when the sibling's in school? To what extent should staff be aware, or should the sibling disclose what's happening so that they can benefit from some pastoral counselling or support within the school setting, do you think?
I absolutely believe that the school should have knowledge of what is going on. It's such a big thing in the siblings' lives, and especially if they're, well, at any stage in life, but if they're going through their exams and stages of transition, it is going to affect their ability to perhaps do work outside of school, to concentrate while they're in school. So I do think the school needs to be aware so that support is there for siblings. But I don't think it should be forced upon them as such, because siblings said that they like to be reminded that the support was there should they wish to take it, but they didn't like it when it was forced on them because they didn't feel that that was beneficial. But it might be a good idea to have sort of a key member of staff that the sibling feels comfortable speaking to, so they can approach this member of staff when they want to discuss something. Maybe have set times, so once a week, where they get together and they have a quick chat and catch up with each other, understand how things are going on. But also, if the school knows, they can put things in place to help the sibling, extra support with schoolwork, extra pastoral support. I really do think it's important to let them know what is happening.
One of the things I'm interested in is, if do you think it's a good idea for a parent, certainly of teenagers going through this experience, to let them listen to this podcast and ask them if it does reflect their experience, and to be brave and open up the dialogue about how it's been for them and how what changes can be made to make them feel more supported in their role as sibling? How do you think parents should use this podcast?
I think it would be a really good idea to allow siblings to listen to it, but also for parents to listen to it, because obviously they've got so much going on with trying to keep the family going and trying to support the child with the eating disorder. And, you know, it can be quite hard for other people to remember that siblings are impacted. So to have the parents and the siblings listen to the podcast, it helps it feel less strange when you've got someone that understands what you're going through. And I often felt that it wasn't my story to tell. It wasn't up to me to go to someone and start talking about what was happening. But then I came to realise that actually it is my story to tell, and my story is that of a sibling. And it is different to, you know, what is happening with the eating disorder as such. So I think it's a really good place to start, to hear from someone that has gone through the same thing. And, you know, you can identify with certain things. Not all experiences are going to be the same, obviously, but it gives you sort of a place to start reflecting and to start discussions.
And if that sibling feels that it hasn't been their experience, that they haven't been, you know, as negatively impacted, or, you know, I think that's helpful as well, to reflect on how they have coped and how they've managed and what's worked for them. And that's also a very interesting, I think, conversation to ignite within family life.
Absolutely, because there might be certain factors that have helped that. So possibly having other siblings in the family unit. So I'm one of three, and I know that that helped because I didn't feel like I was alone in going through it as a sibling. So perhaps if I didn't have another sibling, you know, that could have made my experience even harder. So it'd be sort of quite interesting to know what these protective factors are and how they help lessen the experience.
And if somebody is listening who's a sibling, you know, going through this experience at the minute, what sort of message would you give to them? What message of kind of hope and positivity could you offer?
That things can get better. And, you know, you don't have to try and be there for everyone and be everything for everyone. But you need to look after yourself as well. And, you know, your sibling can recover, and there can be times where they may relapse. But again, that's not down to you, and it's not your responsibility to do that. And, you know, these things happen throughout life, but it is really important to look at your own life and your own future and do things for yourself as well.
Brilliant. And you've mentioned a couple of resources. I think you mentioned Feast, which is an Australian based. We also know about Beat, a wonderful charity based in the UK. What totally useful resources would you say, gosh, parents, teachers or siblings should know about?
So Beat have got a really useful resource on their website, and it's a leaflet for young carers. So it explains what an eating disorder is. It briefly describes different subtypes of eating disorders and how they can help if they are concerned about themselves or somebody else. And it provides details of sources of support. Because it's sort of a leaflet based, it's very short bits of information, it's very colourful, so it appeals to younger audiences. The Oxford Health CAMHS also have a really good article on their website, Advice for Parents in Supporting Siblings, which is really good. Also, I think siblings could look over that, and that would give them some really good advice. And Cared Scotland have got a really good PDF again, you know, supporting siblings when one has an eating disorder.
Brilliant. Well, we will dig those out and we will put them in the notes accompanying this podcast. That's absolutely brilliant. Thank you. Something else I wanted to ask you about. Do you think it's a worthwhile endeavour for the sibling to keep their own journal, to, you know, I don't know, what other little tiny things around self-care would you suggest, Anya?
I think if that is something that the sibling enjoys doing, then I would definitely recommend journaling. I know for me that I was never one for journaling particularly, so I wouldn't have necessarily seen the benefit of that, but I know a lot of people do. I think in terms of self-care is even just take yourself out for a walk, either on your own or with friends or family member, just so you can get out and clear your head and, you know, spend some time away. Still meet up with your friends as much as you can and still try and do social activities. And I know that's sort of easier said than done. We definitely sort of closed in on ourselves a little bit as a family unit and sort of tried to pull together. But you do need to focus on yourself, and it's not selfish to focus on yourself and take care of yourself. Do things that you enjoy, because you need to be healthy to help look after your sibling or to help your parents in whatever way you feel you need to. And you can't do that if you don't take care of yourself.
Absolutely. So your work is amazing. I know you're in the third year of your PhD. Tell us, does this consume all of your time, Anya? Or what other exciting projects are you working on that we can keep an eye on as time goes on?
Of course. So my whole PhD thesis is focused on siblings. So we are planning on doing more research with siblings, and we think it's so important to involve them from the very beginning and from the conception of ideas and research projects, because there's no point in doing research if it doesn't do what we are expecting it to do. So we're hoping to co-produce a novel scale that can be used to measure siblings' experiences of having a brother or sister with an eating disorder, so that we can get some quantitative data on this. There's scales there for parents, but there isn't anything there for siblings. So the idea is that we will include siblings in the research project. They will help us develop the scale, they'll provide feedback on it, and then we will test it with a larger cohort of siblings. I'm also working on some projects with my supervisor, again to do with eating disorders, but not so much focused on siblings. It's more about transition from inpatient services to outpatient services or to community services.
Wow. Well, listen, we're going to follow your work and we're really excited to highlight your work as our Researcher of the Month feature, Anya. And thank you for, you know, telling a little bit of your story there and for your amazing contribution to the research in this area. So best of luck with all of it. And please do stay in touch when that lovely tool that you've just described comes out. Thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. This podcast is brought to you by Tooled Up Education, the home of evidence-based tips on parenting, family life and education. www.tooledupeducation.com. Parents and teachers in Tooled Up schools can also access notes accompanying each podcast available to read and download from the Tooled Up site.